everybody, and welcome to Life After Death and Beyond. I'm James M. Prague, and my good friend Kelly White is joining me. Hello, Kelly White.
Hi, James.
Number
Hi,
one
everybody.
Author of Cracked Open.
That's true. I just have to show it one more time. Cracked Open, number one.
3 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
By the way.
So exciting. Yes,
congratulations, Kelly.
Thank you. Are you
enjoying the ride?
I'm loving the ride. It was a bumpy ride to get here, as you know.
You deserve it. You deserve it. Once everyone reads. And everybody has said that that book is a page turner.
Yeah. They're all saying, when is it going to become a movie?
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's incredible, the different situations and like dramatic events, I guess you would say. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, tonight we have a very special show. We have John Thomas, and John wrote a book called Channel Messages of Hope. There we go.
Yep.
Yeah. And a friend of mine, actually, who was, well, she's my first agent's daughter, recommended that we have John on the show. She published a book for him. So Channel Messages of Hope with John Thomas. And it's really interesting at channeling all different figures of science and history. I should say history. And Kelly, you have his bio, right?
I have his bio. So unfortunately, his wife couldn't be here tonight. But we have John with us. And John is a classic Silicon Valley tech guy. After receiving his chemical engineering degree, John worked for many years in various technical fields, including software, semiconductors, and advanced battery technologies.
Wow.
Along the way, he was able to see the environmental impact of these technologies. And he developed a deep appreciation for those companies that were serious about creating sustainable practices and protecting the environment. In the book, Channeled Messages of Hope, John led the more technical interviews and participated with Carolyn, his wife, and most others. John is currently the CEO of a startup developing highly sustainable technology in the food and agriculture industries. So welcome, John.
John Thomas.
Hey, John.
Thank you, James.
Hi, John. Welcome aboard.
It's really a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
I'm so glad you're here. I realize that. Yeah, thank you, Carolyn, for being here. Carolyn couldn't
be here tonight.
Carolyn is recovering from a particular thing that makes it very difficult for her to speak to any length of time. But while she is the principal author, it is her inspiration. I worked with her extremely closely on all aspects of it, and I appreciate the fact that you'll deal with me on this interview today.
Oh, absolutely. John, how did this book come about?
And when did it come about? How long ago?
Well, we can go back to 2022. And Carolyn had a friend. There's another person on the book, Sam Larkin. She is the channeler. And the method of channeling, I should explain right at the outset, is something we call voice channeling. There's intuitive channeling where the channeler makes contact with the soul. The person that the channeler is talking to will maybe have questions. The channeler, you know, tells the question to the soul and relays it back and forth. That's, I guess, what I've come to learn is called intuitive channeling. Voice channeling, which is what Sam did, is where the soul actually would, by invoking the soul and inviting the soul in, the soul would actually take over Sam's her vocal cords, really her persona for that period of time, usually not more than an hour. And we would actually have conversations through Sam to the soul. So while Carolyn was formulating the interviews, I was working with her, we would actually have dialogue. It wasn't to ask a question, relay it, get the message back. We were actually having dialogue. And Sam, the channeler, would not even really realize this was happening. We would tell her afterwards. She didn't really have recollection. And we would tell her afterwards what transpired. And what you see in the book are the conversations that we had with the souls. And so that's the method of channeling. Channel messages.
She's a trans channel. She's a trans medium, basically. The deep trans medium.
That's probably, in a sense, probably the best way to describe it. The short story of how this came about is that Carolyn knew Sam. She got to know Sam sometime back, well over a decade back. And Sam had intuitive skills. She is not a professional in this industry. She doesn't do sessions for people. But she realized early on that she had the ability to communicate with animals. She could sense when animals were in distress and things like that. And she eventually would help people that she knew. When Carolyn, through a friend, got to know Sam, it's because we were having particular issues with cats in our household. And so we thought, well, maybe Sam could help us understand what these cats were going through. That's how it all started. So after that, and that was actually successful, Sam came back to Carolyn at one point, probably, I'm guessing, 2021 timeframe, and said, I'm getting these high vibration messages. I don't know from where, but they're for you. I know that they're for you. And they were happening more than once. And so Carolyn and Sam said, okay, let's see if we can do a session and invoke wherever that spirit energy is coming from. And it turned out that those messages were indeed coming through for Carolyn from an entity or a soul in what we might call the council. We came to learn, a group of ascended souls, and those messages were for Carolyn. And they were actually able to have dialogue with that particular soul. Carolyn then started realizing, wow, if we can have conversations like that, dialogue with a soul, I wonder if we can talk to other souls. And so Carolyn and Sam got together, and they, you know, they had some souls they were really interested in for various personal reasons, David Bowie and others, and they had these conversations. And then one day, as explained in the book, Carolyn, in the shower, it's always in the shower, these inspirations come, but there's more to say about how guides communicate with us. Carolyn thought, if I can have these kinds of conversations, maybe I can have dialogue with souls that can give us some insights into some things that are happening here on the earth, divided country, there's wars going on, the environment, all these things. And maybe I can actually put out some messages of hope if I get particular insights. That's how it all started. And, you know, there's another story from that point on, but that's how the entire kind of idea for channeled messages of hope came through. I will say, though, in my parting on this, Carolyn had all these issues going on globally that we're all experiencing. It doesn't matter. This is not a political book. It doesn't matter what side of the spectrum you're on.
Right.
But the environment, when she finally had a conversation through Sam with a particular entity, the one that was the origin of those messages to start all this, we'll call this entity Baba for the moment. Baba told her, this is not your idea, Carolyn. This is the council. The council wants you to put these messages of hope out. We realize at the council level, the ascended masters, these are not masters that are coming back into another lifetime as we understand it. And we only understand what we can understand in this lifetime here. The earth, Mother Earth, is having a very hard time right now. The environment is changing a lot. And we want you to concentrate on this particular focus area. And that's why this first book, and there will be more, but that's why the first book is around the environment.
Global warming, a lot of global warming in the book, yeah. And John, did you have to sit at a certain time each week, or in the sessions, was it the same day, same time, or spontaneously, or?
Well, the way it works is once the idea, the topic came about, channel messages of hope around the environment, Carolyn is a researcher, and she does great research. You know, the question is, how did this list of souls that we talked to come together? And you'll notice if you look through the 19 of them, we have policymakers, we have conservationists, we have technologists, we have spiritual leaders. It's kind of an eclectic mix, we might say. And you know, what Carolyn came up with a few at the beginning that she knew she wanted to talk to. She did great research. And we would then, after Carolyn figured out the framework of the questions, we would then tell Sam, and usually only the day before. Sam was not part of, let me say, like the working group that came up with this. We would tell Sam, we want to talk to this one. Here's the picture of maybe G.W. Bush or Nikola Tesla or whoever it might be. And then the next day we would have the session. So it wasn't exactly on a weekly schedule, but it was probably as we were going through the 19 souls, it was pretty regular. It was at least a couple per month, if not more. It depended on how the research came together.
And just so people know, some of the souls that came through, Senator John McCain, Nikola Tesla. We have Jacques Cousteau, Albert Einstein, Gandhi, President Theodore Roosevelt, President Richard Nixon, St. Francis Assisi, Dr. Wayne Dyer, President Ronald Reagan, and more. And out of all the different people, the personalities, the soul personalities that were channeled, were there any that you really found most interesting?
Well, I'll tell you that, you know, Carolyn started all this. And then, you know, you read my bio at the start. So, you know, I'm kind of like a tech guy, whatever right. that means in Silicon
right.
Valley. And she could see that she was going to have to talk to souls that had a lot of technical content here. It's not a book about E equals MC squared, even though that's Albert's, you know, that's his calling card. And so I ended up sitting in on many of these interviews, but, you know, the way that we would go through this is there might be a technologist, there might be a policymaker, there might be a spiritual leader that we wanted to talk to put together really the whole perspective of what's really going on here for people that are concerned with the environment. And by the way, you know, the people I think that would be interested in a book like this are spiritually open, spiritually curious, and concerned about the environment. Where is it going? What am I leaving for my children? And it's not just about what technology is coming. It's about what would policymakers do with our situation today? What would technologists do with our situation today? What would the spiritual leaders have to say about our situation today? And all of that kind of came together, and then Carolyn would do the research, come up with the framework, then we would have the conversations. Sometimes we had maybe more than one conversation for a particular soul, but that's how it all came together. And if
anyone in particular stand out to you?
Sorry, that's where you started. So
yeah.
For Carolyn, she would say, for example, Senator John McCain was a big one for her. He went through a lot as a prisoner of war, and he talked about this. He was not really especially anxious to talk about that experience, but he did for 5-6 years, going through intense physical pain, all that stuff. But what he told us was that his soul kind of the contract, as we've come to find out, when we go to the other side and we learn our lessons, or we acknowledge our lessons and we come back to work on them some more, sometimes in a particular lifetime, the soul wants us to have an experience of a particular way. John McCain, his contract with the soul said, I think you want this experience. We're going to go for it. Probably was more than he really wanted. But the guy was just, I mean, to me, and this is very personal, he's a real hero, and probably to Carolyn too, because he did all that. Then he came back and continued into public service, as we know. Yeah. Now, on my side, you know, I love McCain, Theodore Roosevelt, a real hero. But then you start talking about the technologists. You start looking at what Nikola Tesla did.
Yeah,
Tesla's fascinating. And we talked to Nikola about the inventions. He spent his whole life, you know, working on inventions, sun up to sundown. And actually, along the way, he missed certain human experiences like love, like relationships and things like that. It's a totally different story. But while he was here, and then there's the whole pigeons thing, if you want, we can get into that. But, you know, he was prolific in his inventions. And a lot of his thinking has led into things that lead to technologies that are really going to help us in this whole environmental, I will consider it a crisis that we're in. We need cleaner energy that's also economically viable. You know, those two things have to come together. The policymakers made that clear to us. So I don't want to like isolate any of the 19 souls, right, just Tesla, but you know, we have things that really stick with us.
What I thought, John, was so fabulous is that you asked the subjects, you know, what were they doing now? Are they planning on reincarnating again? And are they going to help people on Earth as guides? And some were and some were not.
Some weren't, yeah.
Well, that's really fascinating. Like, if you look at the some were not. Some are more evolved in their particular in-between human lifetimes. Not everyone is coming back in the human lifetime. Samuel Clemens, for example. Why do we talk to Samuel Clemens? Because Tesla said we would always end the interviews with who should we be talking to? Because the original, that list of 19, we didn't have that list to begin with. Many of them were souls leading us to other souls.
Tesla, well, I was amazed that they were friends. I didn't know that they were friends on Earth.
I didn't either. And so when Tesla said, I want you to talk to Samuel Clemens, like, Samuel Clemens, head scratcher. Oh, Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain. Turns out that Samuel Clemens was a prolific investor in his own right. He made a lot of money from the Mark Twain books. He liked to invest in different things. He had his own inventions that weren't technology per se, but he formed a relationship with Nikola Tesla. He spent a lot of time in the lab with Tesla. And actually, Samuel Clemens is one of those that is not coming back in a body, because we learned, and we didn't know this at the beginning, but we learned to ask. And he said, no, you know, I've graduated. And he actually, if I might just jump a little bit forward, he greets when people on Earth die from gun violence and they transition very quickly. It can be a very confusing experience. If you go from leading your human life to poof, you're going to the other side. He is a greeter on the other side for these people that suffer that. And this, we never would have found out this kind of thing without having those kinds of conversations with the souls. I thought it was fascinating.
And what about, I was fascinated with the St. Francis, about the animals. What did you, learn something new when St. Francis came through, or did you?
Well, there's two ways. First of all, St. Francis.
Of Assisi.
Yeah. Right. Oh, that St. Francis.
Of Assisi.
He is an ascended master. While we were not told who is on this thing called the council, we know that he is. And, you know, there's a famous story about St. Francis with the wolf, and the wolf was terrorizing the population. And then St. Francis, we asked him about that. He validated that that is true. But the bigger message I got from St. Francis, because when you look at who we talk to, from policymakers, conservationists, all the way to spiritual leaders, including Wayne Dyer, St. Francis really put it together, at least for me personally. And he said, look, you know, we are all one. Okay. We're all connected. All living things are connected. This is in the context of what's going on with the environment. Okay. Mother Earth has a soul. Living things, nature, plants, animals, human beings. Oftentimes as human beings, we might place ourselves up here and everything else is to serve us down below. St. Francis was very clear that we are all one. And if we can revere each other and have respect for each other, and the other spiritual leaders had the same message, that Mother Earth is not happy with the way that humans are treating each other now. And by the way, on the environmental thing, if we get there, I do have a message for the climate deniers per se, but basically at a spiritual level, Mother Earth is not happy with the way that humans are treating each other. And, you know, St. Francis' point of view is that we are all one. John Muir had a really interesting perspective too. He said, if you treat the environment like it's a church, revere it, respect it as if it is a church, because it is. Mother Earth and everything nature is giving us as humans here in a body on this earth an environment to live in. It delivers everything that we need. We have air, water, food, all these things. And if we are treating it with that level of respect, I think, I don't know if it was St. Francis, but maybe it was Gandhi, but it's like, if you had family members that were treating you very badly, it doesn't really want to make you interact with the other family members. You know, there's a personal way to kind of look at this stuff. So St. Francis really had a strong message in that regard. We are one, is that message.
And what about Wayne Dyer? Because a lot of people are crawling in here and on our channel here, don't know about Wayne Dyer. And what was his messages that came through? And were they surprising or? Curious, because I brought Wayne
Dyer. Yeah, I will give you some very specific Wayne Dyer. Okay. Oh, actually, because there's a couple things that I've noted. So here's what Wayne Dyer said. We asked him, what is the spiritual lesson with climate change? Again, I have a message for deniers about climate change, but let's just assume there's climate change. Dyer says it's a collective guilt for the abuse of Mother Earth, which means common man expects punishment. This is a really interesting way to look about it. And the lesson is to come together as a race to learn from mistakes and not view life as a win the competition. These were specific messages from Wayne Dyer. The other one that you might find interesting is that Earth feels angry, but this is a reflection of man today. So what can we do? We can go inward. We can meditate on what man can do, go inward and visualize love. And by the way, this is really interesting. St. Francis told us that Wayne Dyer, who was a teacher, and by the way, when Wayne Dyer transitioned, you know, when he came to the other side and he kind of came into his consciousness there, he said it looked just like Maui, because to him, Maui, which is where he lived, was heaven on earth.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of interesting things from different souls about what it's like when they transition.
I loved with Wayne when he went to have a visit with his father, who he had had a lot of struggle with. That was really interesting to read.
Well, you know, Wayne was a foster child in a sense, right? The father deserted. And Carolyn is actually in her next book. There will be a series of books on this kind of messages of hope concept. Wayne Dyer is kind of a central about what is the power of forgiveness, to forgive what happened to Wayne from his childhood. And for those that have read his books, and many on this show, James and Kelly, have read, you know, his books, we know that he dealt with a lot.
I knew Wayne very well, actually. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. So, you know, the message Wayne really left us with is that everything we need is already here. Just appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Wow. And what about Einstein? I found that fascinating, too.
Well, you know, Einstein, being a highly technical guy, he has had several things going. First of all, on the environment, you know, when we look at the market here, like, okay, there's people that are like, I'm having children now. What kind of, I'm seeing the polar ice caps melting. What am I going to leave them in this earth? Well, the message coming through, one of the things that Einstein told us, and he was the guy that really was behind a lot of nuclear technology, is that nuclear fission is what we know today. So nuclear reactors, such as that generate nuclear waste and things that terrify people, is what today's technology is. Nuclear fusion is very clean nuclear energy. No radioactive waste, completely clean. So one of his technical messages was, hey, this is being worked on. And we see various news articles here and there, probably in 20, 30 years. And we got this same kind of time frame from others. This technology will start to come about. And when we do, it'll be a clean energy source that can really change the game. So that's from a noted technologist. And as a guide to people on Earth, people in a body, he's working both on the other side with technologists and with people on Earth as a guide to give them inspirations, either through their dreams, through their aha moments, through their moments of invention. This is the way that the souls interact with us in a body. But a very interesting thing with Einstein is when we got, you know, when we were at the tail end of the interview and we said, hey, who should we talk to? And he said, I want you to talk to Mileva Einstein, his wife. Actually, they were married on Earth, but they divorced, but they had a son, Edward. Edward had schizophrenia. Okay.
I didn't know that.
Well, yeah. So Mileva Einstein was very, you know, her whole life was really devoted to taking care of Edward. But this is the interesting thing about why did Einstein want to talk to Mileva is that she was very instrumental in all of his technical development. She was a key contributor. In today's day and age, she'd be a co-author on his patents, on his technical papers. But at the time, women were not respected, or they couldn't really be in that role as much as she contributed. So she had to take a backseat. And part of what we learned through this whole process of channel messages of hope is that when the souls go over and they go through a review process and they look at what lessons were they learning when they were in a body and possibly what they may work on if they come back, those that do come back, most do, is that, you know, giving the proper acknowledgement to the partner. I don't want to really speak for Albert exactly in this way, but he wanted to talk to Maleva to make sure that her contribution was brought to the surface. And here's the interesting thing. When we talked to Maleva, because we, would we have known to talk to Maleva? Of course, God, no, we would not have known that. But we, right. When we brought her in and we talked to her and she explained her role working with Albert on this, she explained the challenges of taking care of Edward. And then we started to figure out that, hey, we're going to talk to these souls about whether they may be incarnated now. And she said, yes, I am a psychotherapist in India. Let's call me David. And I came back because I want to work with people with, you know, mental challenges, mental health challenges. And so that's what she's doing in India, of all things. And so that was Albert working on his lesson through us. And I felt honored that he would do that.
So that's an interesting point that Maleva said, that she's now reincarnated, but that soul part of her is still able to speak, communicate, which I try telling people all the time, because you can be in several places at once in your soul, and that's an important point to make, I think, that people understand.
Now, here's the thing for both of you, James and Kelly. It's like, I can't claim to know anything. I'm just a guy in a body sitting down here in Silicon Valley, the tech guy. But what I've ascertained, this is my belief system, is that we have a piece of source in us. And there are millions of souls. And the souls go through lifetimes. And when we go through a lifetime, there are lessons that we're here to learn, or experiences that we're here to experience. Whatever it may be, we may experience them in a certain way. We do have free will. It's not all preordained. Again, my belief system. And when we also heard it from enough different souls, and I've actually observed some things in my own lifetime, I do believe that when a soul transitions to the other side, they go through a review process about what happened in their lifetime. Sure. What did they learn? What are some things they can learn? And we got different viewpoints from different souls, because I was sitting there going, I don't know if I want to come back to this earth. Man, it's hard down here, you know.
But, what kind of different review points that you're talking about? That's really fascinating to me.
Like, okay, I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
Ronald Reagan, okay, he said that when he was on Earth, he kind of hid behind his words in our interviews, a false persona. And when you look at his lifetime, he was an actor. He wanted to be a president. And he said he never really revealed his authentic self. And so he is in a review process about that. And probably, who am I to say, but in his next lifetime, he will probably focus on being able to reveal that true self. Now you go to someone else. Let's take Rachel Carson. I'll completely flip it. Rachel Carson, who wrote the well-known book Silent Spring, she brought a lot of awareness to pesticides and the detrimental effect on the environment. But her life ended. She was ravaged by cancer. It was a very bad ending for her in terms of pain. As many people, we all have been through this with people that we know and love. And she's actually looking forward to coming back on Earth to work in some capacity where she's working to improve, you know, to work on cancer, whether it's research or whatever it may be. And we have other examples like that in the book. I think when you read each soul interview, what you'll get is a lot of what they're doing on the other side, how they work with people on Earth, what this concept of guides are, what are the lessons. Not all of them, but many of them reveal some of that, and what, you know, they may be working on in a later lifetime, and some of them may not be having a later lifetime. Back to our Samuel Clemens, as he said, I graduated.
What about Nixon? I thought that was fascinating that he chose Nixon to put in.
Help about Nixon, please.
Nixon, why Nixon? Okay, first of all, this is not a political book.
Right.
But we do talk to policymakers. The reason we chose, you know, Theodore Roosevelt, Ronald Reagan, Nixon, et cetera, is because they were important policymakers in a time when the environment really needed policymakers, okay? Now, when Carolyn started doing the research, there was no way that Nixon was on the list. I have a feeling I'm kind of in the same kind of, you know, genre, age range as you guys. What do we know about Nixon? Watergate.
Yeah.
A very bad situation. But Nixon in his time was way ahead of the game on environment. In fact, in his State of the Union in 1970, he was talking about concepts like reparations to the environment. We need clean water. He was way ahead of the game, I can tell you. And so when Carolyn found out about that, she was like, I really want to talk to Nixon. Now, in our conversations, if, for example, Stephen Schneider was a key advisor, technical guy, but key advisor to many presidents. And we talked to souls about, do you think Nixon would talk to us? They told us he's deep in review. He will not reveal himself. He probably won't come out. But Carolyn chose to take the risk. And so we actually invoked Nixon. Carolyn was terrified. And in fact, I'm not sure if this one's on our website, but Channel Messages of Hope, we do actually have audio excerpts of interviews because we recorded all the interviews that we did through Sam via Zoom. There are excerpts on, and we do have an audio book coming out, by the way. But when Nixon came through, it took a while. Normally, the souls will appear very quickly through Sam. Sam invokes them. Theodore Roosevelt rode in on Cleo. Cleo was one of his horses, Cleopatra. You know, he was a bigger than life kind of guy. But Nixon took a while. And when he came in, he said, are you sure that you want to be talking to me? And Carolyn said, well, yeah, because, you know, we know that you did these things. You were in tune with the environment needed. We want to talk to you about this. It's not like we want to talk to you to throw more stones at Watergate or something like that. And then he sort of warmed up on the whole thing. And he actually came through. Carolyn was terrified for him because she didn't know what was going to happen with this. But I will say that, you know, Nixon was actually, I will give him a lot of credit. And I think, I don't know, but I think the fact that we acknowledge what he was trying to do environmentally does not compensate. It's merely in another column with what he was doing on the other things. I'm hoping that at least helped to balance the scale a little bit.
Did you talk about what he's doing now, Nixon?
Well, we were told by Stephen Schneider and others that he's in deep review. And the life lesson for him was that he operated with this extreme, am I pronouncing this right, hubris. You know, like, I'm bigger than everyone. I'm more powerful than everyone. I am, you know, he had this kind of me and them kind of mentality. And so his review process is to get a hold of that. It's kind of back to what St. Francis said, you know, we are one. We are all one. We are all connected. I think that Nixon, I won't speak for him, but I will surmise, he felt like I'm connected at a higher level maybe than everybody else. And he had this particular point of view, and it kind of came through in what we saw with the Watergate thing, like I'm above it all. And he's in a review process to get his hands around that. So when he comes back in another lifetime, I believe he can, you know, he can address that or work on that or have a different experience, let me say.
Yeah. Abraham Lincoln never came through, huh?
You know, I saw that on your website, actually. Lincoln may be in the next book. He's been discussed quite often, but he was not actually part of the 19 souls.
I was surprised, of all people, I thought Abe Lincoln would come right through with that.
I'm curious, for another book, John, would you do another topic instead of environment? Would you choose something else?
We definitely would. In fact, what Carolyn is considering right now is things like, for example, when we talk to John McCain, and you look at overcoming challenges to keep going with your experience, it's probably things like the power of forgiveness or, you know, heroism in a very challenging environment. Look at people that are political activists. You can look at people that went through, I'm not saying this will be harder. I don't know. Carolyn will decide. But when you look at the Holocaust, what happened there, again, we are not a political entity here. We're about messages of hope for people that are going through things or worried about things or worried about, like, for example, on the environment. You know, we can say, oh, you know, the environment is going, it's in trouble right now. But what can we do? I have a little different perspective now on this, and it factors to the next book. It's like, I may have to come back in another lifetime. What am I coming back to? I better try to do what I can do now for the lifetime I'm in now to make it a little, I don't want to show up in my next lifetime and have to deal with all the trouble. Maybe I could have at least done my part as an individual to try to rectify. And it's the same thing with the next book, what, you know, the power of forgiveness or overcoming life challenges, these kinds of things that collectively lead to a better experience. You know,
I think forgiveness is a great one. If I have my 2 cents on this, forgiveness is a good topic.
I agree. But John, besides appreciation, what's the one thing that we can do right now that the council thinks that we can do to help planet Earth?
You know, there's a long list of things we can do individually, everything from small things like picking up litter. But here's the main thing. And St. Francis and the spiritual leaders really frame this. If we can treat everything that we're connected to, if we can revere it and respect it in a common way, back to the St. Francis, we are one, back to Wayne Dyer saying, you know, the earth is kind of angry right now about the way man is treating man and it's being reflected. Back to John Muir saying, if you treated this environment as a church, if we could simply have common respect and kindness, compassion, empathy. I know these things are thrown around. It might sound a bit trite in the way that I say it, but this truly is the answer. Because when you look at the environment, what we can do individually, I'll give you an example. During the pandemic, we saw that when the earth slowed down, and Gandhi is a prime proponent of things are just too hectic. Can you people just slow down a little bit? We saw the air over Beijing clean up. Why? Because, you know, people stop driving cars. Now, that's not always really practical. But moving toward cars that don't emit that kind of pollution is practical. And we're seeing it. So the kind of things we can do individually, because if you're worried about what am I leaving to my children? Well, start teaching them a few basic things. Here's the analogy I thought of. What if for the next 30 days we said, we are not going to litter ourselves. We absolutely will not litter. And by the way, if we see a piece of litter on the ground, we'll pick it up. If everyone on this earth did that for 30 days, I guarantee you there would be a change, not just in litter on the ground, but a change in the collective thinking. So it's treating everyone with respect. The spiritual leaders will tell us that. But taking some personal responsibility, and don't take more than you need. Leave this earth a little bit better than how you found it.
That's
if
true.
Everyone did that, oh my God, I just know it would be a game changer.
Wow. And regarding forgiveness, for the next book, if that's the theme for the next book, are there any ideas about people you'd like to hear from about forgiveness? Any specific people?
First of all, James, we're going to give you a full nickel's worth on this one, not just 2 cents, okay? And forgiveness. Well, John McCain is a classic example because he's in the book, but Alexei Navalny has gone through a lot. Carolyn has a list of, she has a list of souls that have had to deal with a lot. I mean, Wayne Dyer. I'm not trying to just regurgitate the stuff that we already have, but to frame it or give it context, that people that have practiced forgiveness, which is really releasing something within self to allow you then to go on and accomplish greater things.
It'd be great to have a Holocaust person, a victim of the Holocaust, come through and talk about forgiveness. That'd be an interesting one.
We do have a couple examples there. I don't know if they're household, you know, names, but you know, that That's part of the challenge of the book here, is to give people messages of hope from those that maybe they have some inherent respect for, that really had to deal with some things that we might not have known that they had to deal with. So we tried to give a little bit of exposure. I mean, you know, Maleva Einstein's a prime example. You're not going to read about Maleva Einstein too often. You will in our book, and there's a reason for it. And Albert Einstein had a link there. So it's a little bit of a tricky formula, but we're trying to come through with it, and talking with people, Kelly, like you and James, it helps. It helps us.
Wow. What kind of message did you want to leave for everybody?
The main message I would leave is, like, look, if you are spiritually open, you're spiritually curious, and you care about this environment, you may have despair about where the environment is going. You don't have to have despair. There are things that are being done and things that you can do. On the environment specifically, I will say one good message that came through is that, you know, the younger generation is really getting it. Okay, they're really getting it. And so a lot of the technologies that are being worked on, not just nuclear fusion, but things like deacidification of the oceans. How about, you know, let's replace plastics with things that are plant-based. There's so many technologies that are being worked on. I mean, look, I work in Silicon Valley. My company is funded by venture capital. The things that we're doing in my own company do have a sustainability aspect to them. We got to figure out a way to make money too, where these guys won't keep us going. But the younger generation, which I am not part of, but I see, is really grabbing hold of the fact that the environment is something that we have to work on. And if you might just indulge me for 30 seconds, one thing I do want to say about, there's many people that will say, well, you know, there's not really climate change right now. It's just weather. It's just the way it goes. Well, here's what I would say. There is a natural cycle on this earth between sort of an ice house type of effect and a greenhouse effect. But that natural cycle is a 100,000-year cycle. It gives our earth a chance to react, to stay in balance. The problem we have now is because in the industrial age, we have so taken the earth out of balance so quickly. We have shifted so fast toward a greenhouse effect because of fossil fuel and all the other things that we have done, that the earth doesn't have a chance to react fast enough to create the environment that truly, you know, I tell people, you know, we can talk about our houses and our cars. In my opinion, we own nothing. We rent. All of us rent. And then we are gone in someone else's thing. Let's take care of what we have. And the problem is the earth just can't react fast enough because we have so skewed the greenhouse effect. So many of these technologies, what people are working on, are an attempt to try to bring us back into a point where the earth, who naturally wants to balance, in the way that when our bodies heal, if we get a cut on our hand, that cut will slowly heal. You know, we want to be back in balance. It's just, if you chop your hand off, you can't necessarily, people would argue with me, you know, it doesn't come back that quickly. We have to give our earth a chance to be able to react in the semblance of a more balanced way. So that's really, we can do our part now to try to maintain this environment, to give our earth a chance for those that come after us. And by the way, it may be us. So think about that.
Wow. Amazing, really. The Channel Messages of Hope is a book. There we go. And so when you talk about the Earth changes, do they say anything about the future of the Earth as far as the changes? Well, do they have a summary of what's the factor that we can change?
You know, the thing is that this is my belief system now after what I've learned going through this experience, is there's not a grand master plan of exactly how it's going to work out. Free will is in effect. Okay. We can make choices. So one point of view might be, I think it was Stephen Schneider, maybe it was Charles Keeling, said, look, the earth has been around for 5 billion years. It's not going away overnight. Okay. It's not going to be all of a sudden gone, I don't think. But the way that we as humans enjoy this environment, I mean, I think John Muir said it. It's like, look what's happening. I mean, because of the fact that we're out of balance in the greenhouse effect, we have, you know, a drought in the west and we have floods on the east. We're seeing more extremes of weather. I think what will happen is we will continue to see weather extremes, which will then compress where people really want to live, actually. It's probably you're going to see an exodus, or you're going to see a migration, per se, of where people maybe want to live. It's going to affect the way that we do things globally. So we can mitigate that by probably, you know, doing things that we have the power to do. But where it's going, is it going to be like a disaster in a 1,000 years, in 100 years, in 50 years? I don't know. I kind of worry more about like what's going to happen between now and the end of the century. What about the people I'm connected to? People that have children now that I'm connected to. And again, let me just get back to, and if I come back to this earth, I want to make sure that I did some things, or at least I had enough acknowledgement while I was here to do a few things that I can do, try to leave it a little bit better than how I found it, so that I will be able to deal. And that's probably the best. I it's not a great answer, James, but that's probably the best I can give you on that.
Kelly, last words?
Well, this is fascinating. I think that everybody should go out and get this book. They should read this book, because you'll find some gems in this book. I found so many great gems. I was just fascinated with Gandhi, by the way. I loved his little message for hope. I mean, these are great. This is really great, because it will also tell everybody, you know, what are they doing on the other side, and can anybody use them as guides? That was really interesting to me.
So that was interesting.
Really fascinating. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you, John, very much.
Being here tonight.
I really appreciate the chance, James and Kelly. Thank you very much. And like, there's a lot of, again, spiritually open, spiritually curious, have some concerns about the environment. There's something for you here.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, James. Thanks, everybody. Good to see you. Thanks, Ryan.
All right. Bye-bye.